Here you are. BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy. And your plants do too.
Aw,
I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
Hello, 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 hello. I'm Yasmin.
Hi. I'm Alicia Pascual Peña.
I'm Josie. And we're in Puerto Rico. Well, half of us are in Puerto Rico.
Wait, tell us why.
Well, I think we said why in our last installment. But we're visiting Alicia at work. And we are so happy to be here. I'm staring out into the beautiful Puerto Rican island.
Yeah, we're in Puerto Rico. She was so kind enough to come visit me.
For her birthday.
Yeah. I'm another year older, which feels very odd to say.
She's 24.
Yeah.
24.
Good job. How are you, Yazzie Boo? We miss you.
March 19th, a star was born, and it's not Lady Gaga in the Bradley Cooper film. It was Alicia Pascual Peña. Thank you very much. So if you didn't wish her happy birthday, then you're ugly. And so here's
the
thing.
How was Joshua Tree?
I really, really wish I was with you guys.
I wish you were with us too.
Joshua Tree was beautiful. I went for my friend's birthday. I was with all my girls. It was nice. It was fun. I tried shrooms for the first time, and I don't know if it's for me.
Why? Do tell.
Why do you say that?
I was just like, first of all, I was like, I need to be on the floor. I don't want to be on a couch. I was on the floor between like Lily and Talia. Between my two friends, and I was just like, I don't know why. Maybe I didn't take enough. Maybe it's because I'm on antidepressants, so it inhibits how effective it actually works on me. But it was just like fine. You know, weed is more effective for me.
Did you see stuff that always fascinates me?
I don't think I took enough, so I think I want to try more in a different environment. I feel like with less people, because it was like 10 girls, and you know, I don't know if it was the best idea to do it with like a lot of people for my first time. So probably best to do it again. So overall, Joshua Tree, beautiful. Overall, girls trip, stunning. Overall, shrooms, not enough. Back
wow,
to you.
That was a wonderful report of your week. We're going to have to hear about your second time.
Thank
on shrooms, how that goes.
My week was really good. My weekend was good. I had my dad's 60th birthday, which was the rowdiest party I've been to since like a fraternity gala. We had a DJ that was playing reggaeton and Bad Bunny and the song Shots that my mom had hired. And just like all 70, 60, 50 year old Arabs just like marching around and raging, which was iconic. My dad may or may not have participated in a bit of a striptease when a certain song came on. It was incredible. We had a food truck in our driveway and we missed you both dearly. My mom, it was like an open bar. My mom hired a bartender and she had like this like assistant running around. Shout out Katie, she's an icon. So Chrissy really went off.
Chrissy did go off.
And then weirdly, we went to a bar that night and the theme of the bar was an Iranian themed bar. So we just had Middle Eastern themes throughout the whole night. And then it was Iranian music. So we had gone from listening to more Arab music to more Arab music. It was a very Middle Eastern night.
So speaking of your dad's beautiful turned Middle Eastern party, and Yaz, you being in tune with nature and your girls trip this week, me being in Puerto Rico, it led us to talk about who we are and like where we come from today. And I'm super excited to talk about our own ethnicities and our own cultural backgrounds. Because I think that even though we come from different places, we experience a lot of the same things when it comes to like feeling invalidated in our womanhood or not always being seen in America. for the nuances of our culture. I think one of the many ways that our friendship has grown, like between us three sisters, is learning so much about each other's families and learning words in each other's languages. Mm-hmm. I have been so grateful to wake up to Josie and Yaz telling me Yalla Habibti and knowing your beautiful babas and stuff like that. So today, I'm excited for us, during Women's History Month, no better time than to talk about who we are, where we come from. Yeah. For people that don't know, where are you guys from? Where are your parents from? How did we end up in America?
Yeah, so I am I'm born in America, obviously. Not obviously, I guess that's not obvious. Well, I feel like I would make it my brand if I wasn't born in America, that I wasn't born here. But my parents are both of Middle Eastern descent. My mom is Lebanese. My dad is Palestinian. And my grandparents had their first son in Ramallah in Palestine. And then they moved to Chicago.
So my family came to Flint, Michigan. My dad came on a boat at 12 years old from Lebanon to Michigan because of the war that broke out in Lebanon. So yeah, my dad is an immigrant. All my family is still in Lebanon on my dad's side. They are from Beirut, but they're also from the mountains. I'm Ba'atlin. And then my mom's side, my mom was born in, oh God, she was born in the Berkshires, Massachusetts. And there's no shade to that. But it'd be awesome if my mom was also born in Lebanon, but she wasn't. But her dad was born in Lebanon. So anyways, so my mom's mom, it was born in Massachusetts too. So she was first gen from her dad, and she's half Italian and half Lebanese.
I'm from New York originally in the Bronx, but that is where my family immigrated to from Dominican Republic. As far back as I can look, like so many people ask like, oh, like what do you mix with? One, very problematic question. Please stop asking people that you've just met what they're mixed with. Let's get that on record. But people ask me like, oh, like what do you mix with? And I am just Dominican. Mm. I am just Dominican, very proudly of it. But something that I definitely want to get into is explaining to people that I'm Dominican. It becomes very evident very quickly to me that people don't understand the difference between race, ethnicity, and culture.
And nationality.
Like people don't understand that those are distinctly different things. Mm-hmm. Like people are always like, oh, but if you're Dominican, are you Black? And I'm like, yes, because my race is a Black woman. And I'm very proudly Afro-Latina. But my ethnicity is just Dominican and my nationality is American. My dad was born in Dominican Republic. I would say more than half of my family was born in Dominican Republic. So I'm first generation American on my dad's side and then second on my mom's. None of my grandparents speak English. And I always felt very in tune with our culture. And I wanted to ask, why do we feel like it was important to talk about this today?
We have talked so much about this, us three, how in this space, there is not enough conversation about Afro-Latinas, specifically Dominican women. And there is not enough conversations about Arab women, specifically Palestinian and specifically Lebanese as well. And I feel like we do have the platform to talk about this. And I feel like we do need to take up space because we are here and we're not going anywhere.
I think in addition to it being Women's History Month, and I think it's important that we uplift where we're from and our family ideals. I also think it's a conversation that needs to be had. This is really beautiful that we're having more conversations about diversity and representation. But I think to be honest about progress is the fact that we still have so much work to do. I am currently still going places 100%. In the United States where someone asks me my ethnicity or how I identify and I say I'm an Afro-Latina. And in 2023, I'm still being told by people, which is okay, ignorance is the lack of knowledge, right? Or the lack of context. But I still have people in 2023 being like, I've never heard someone say that they're an Afro-Latina. And as much as I think that we are moving in a beautiful direction of seeing ourselves more, that still tells me like there's still so much work to be done. I still need to be uplifting conversations, and progress and growth and evolving means the continuous work. Mm. So just because we've had beautiful moments, and we have amazing people like Ariana DeVos and Gina Torres and people, and I'm speaking for my own community because I want you guys to have space too. We still need to be educating people, you know, with with the access and platforms that 100%. We have. So I thought that's why we need to be having this conversation today. And it made me really excited because I know that I've learned so much from friendship with you guys about the Middle East, and there's still so much for me to learn. And I still think that the media and just the general public doesn't know enough about the nuances about where we each come from. So that's why I think this conversation is really important, and then I'm excited about it.
You are the first person that I've ever been close or met, I guess, that I'm in my memory as a person who said that they were Afro-Latina. Mm. And I think that obviously there's a smaller community of like Dominicans and Puerto Ricans in LA, although we've seemed to find them. I feel like everyone found of every friends single now one. Is Dominican or Puerto Rican. And I love it. It makes me so happy. And seeing you and your community and in your culture like makes me so happy. And I loved when we celebrated Dominican Independence Day, and just like seeing you listening to your music with your people gave me so much warmth, because I feel like in America, especially in predominantly white spaces, which all of us have navigated through, mm-hmm. it can be hard to find community in that way. But because you're one of the first people that I've, you know, gotten to know really, really well about not just you being Afro-Latina, but the specifics of the history of your culture and how you guys to this country. And I was wondering if you'd be comfortable sharing with us the background behind that.
Absolutely. Thank you for asking, Josie. And you know what's crazy is a lot of my best friends have told me that I was one of the very first, or if not the first, person that they had ever met that identified as Afro-Latina. And I'm so grateful to be a part of a community that is always willing to learn and so transparent. But to answer your question, the reality of it is Afro-Latinidad has always existed. There are Black people throughout Latin America. We're actually such a large portion of the population, but the reality of why a lot of people have never heard the term or don't identify that way is because of anti-Blackness being so prominent within Latin America. Mm. So for example, growing up, I always knew I was Dominican, but no one in my family identified as Afro-Latina, even though we were Black people who spoke Spanish. So I have spoken about it before, but as much as I loved my culture and I'm so proudly Dominican, I really had to learn what being like Black in America was by myself. Mm. Because I think that Afro-Latinidad till this day is a community that's invalidated. We are gaslit about the racism that we face. Because there is something that a lot of Latinos do. And I say this with love because I know that we're capable of being better, is why I speak this way. But a lot of Latinos kind of have this narrative of, oh, because I'm a person of color or because I have faced oppression, I can't be racist, which is far from true. There is a difference between white and Black Latinos. There's a difference in privileges. For example, if you really want to get into the nitty gritty of it all, I'm a Black woman, but I don't face the adversity of a dark skinned Black woman with 4C hair. So there are times that I need to sit and listen and grow from those experiences when I'm talking to my other Black sisters and brothers. And a very quick history lesson on my country specifically is Dominican Republic is in the Caribbean, and our original indigenous people were called Taínos. The same way there were like Mayans and Aztecs in Mexico, us, it was Taínos. And then during the transatlantic slave trade, something that a lot of people don't know is 70 to 80% of Africans who were enslaved because of the transatlantic slave trade were sent to the Caribbean. And that was done by Europeans, including Spaniards. So for my country specifically, Spaniard conquistadors, so colonizers, brought slaves to work on the island. And then by rape and by the continuous like intersectionalities is why you have a country of people that are Black and have indigenous roots with Taínos and speak Spanish because of colonization. So it always boggles my mind, but I understand why so many Latinos get so uncomfortable with the conversation of race, because it's internalized racism and self-hatred, and we still have to work on not pandering to like white supremacy, you know, and kind of decolonizing our minds.
Yeah, I think that is very important to mention too, because I think we even often navigate circles where we meet people and it's one or the other with some people. Obviously, this isn't a conversation that I'm a part of because I'm not Black, nor am I Afro-Latina.
Yeah, but you've witnessed.
But from, I've witnessed knowing from you, it's like people who are Black presenting, who don't want to be Black or don't say that they're Black. And then the other side of it, who are people who are not Black presenting, but are Dominican. And are like, I can say the N word. I can say this because.
Because I am.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Because once again, there's a difference. As a Dominican person, all of us have African ancestry. We have Spaniard ancestry and we have indigenous ancestry. But it does not mean that you are Black. You know what I mean? For example, my mom and I are 100% the exact same culture. Both my mom and dad are from the exact same island, but they are different complexions. And that's why, like, you know, I think our education system fails us in certain ways because they put us in certain rigid boxes and lack the intersectionality of going, hey, this may be your culture, but not your race. For example, there are biracial people that their Blackness should never be negated. If you are biracial and Black and white, you should be proud of your Blackness. But there's a difference between navigating the world as a Black person and having ancestry that is Black.
And a lot of that has to do with how you're perceived.
Exactly.
Because race is a construct.
Race is a social construct with valid real world.
Which I think is important to mention too, because when we say if you're Black, if you're not Black, when we're referring to race, we're referring to the color of your skin.
Social construct. And that's why featureism and texturism is a thing. And that's why, like, I've been very grateful to now be in spaces and learn from activists that I love and authors that I love. Like, when I talk about Blackness, I'm talking about the African diaspora. That is why when I talk about empowerment and collective, it's in regards to, like, the African diaspora and understanding, like, there are nuances of texturism and featureism, and that even though we are one Black family that should be united, there are differences in our experiences. And unfortunately, I think my country really still does struggle with listening and validating the racism that Black Latinos are experiencing. Because even though we're all Latinos, there's a difference between how we're perceived and the racism that we still deal with in our country. And I think Afro-Latinos as a whole, it's still very much a battle to even, like, feel seen or feel validated. Because I feel like, Josie, you've seen it happen to me. Yaz, you've seen it happen to me, where people want me to prove my Latinness to them or my Latinidad.
And they act shocked and appalled when they hear you speak Spanish. Yeah. And they're like, when did you learn Spanish? And you're like, it's my first language.
I think it also goes both ways, where you have to, what I've witnessed is you have to prove your Latinidad, and you have to also, I've noticed, prove your Blackness sometimes also in different spaces. I've noticed, I felt like, for example, on Saved by the Bell, I've seen it, like, on different comments and stuff. Like, people within different communities saying, well, you're one thing or the other, when you didn't have to. Does that make sense? Not in physical things, but how people perceive
you. Well, I do feel like people throughout my life have been like, okay, so are you Latino or are you Black? And I'm like, yeah. I understand.
That's what I'm trying to say.
And it's like, no, that's the beauty of an intersectionality. I'm proudly both. I'm not one percentage of one or one percentage of the other. And that makes people uncomfortable. Because specifically in America, I think it's done throughout the world, there's a social hierarchy where you have to pick one. And it's like, I've refused to do that my whole life. And I'm not going to make you feel more comfortable in your whiteness by diluting one part of myself, you know? Mm-hmm. But what are things that you guys think that you struggled with?
100%.
Sorry, do you want to add something before I ask a question? Yes.
Yes, I think the three things that really stuck with me, what you said, is the first thing is the miseducation. Because I feel like, you know, we don't, in school, at least for me, we had one day talking about the transatlantic slave trade, and then that was it. And how it doesn't affect any of the Caribbean countries, it just goes straight to the southern part of the United States. Second is the inner racism within people of color as well. And then the blatant racism within people of color as well. Because a lot of times with Arabs too, they are so racist towards other types of people. And they say that we can do that though, because we're also people of color and we're also marginalized. Yeah. So it's okay to be awful to other people.
Something we've learned is that everybody is racist. No, but it's just the truth. Every culture.
No. Yeah. Let's not say everybody's racist. What I think.
Not everybody's racist. I think what you're trying to say. Every culture has embedded racist tendencies and does racist shit.
Well, I think.
To another culture.
I think that there's ignorance across the world. And I think that the infrastructures that we all live under are rooted in white supremacy. Let's call it what it is. White supremacy.
Yes.
And as people of color, I think sometimes to alleviate the own pressure that we harbor within ourselves, we want to oppress someone else. You know what I mean? Mm. Or point fingers somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that really hurts me because it's a lack of self-love. Yes. It's a lack of being able to celebrate the uniqueness of where you come from. Mm. And also, we play this oppression Olympics sometimes. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, well, I've struggled. Yes, an Asian person, indigenous person, Middle Eastern person, we're all struggling, but it doesn't mean that we struggle in the same way. So we should want to support one another and liberate one another while also listening to the differences that we're experiencing day to day. You know what I mean? But I found myself so many times being like you trying to be white so bad, or like you really like are trying to prove something that you're not. You know what I mean? And I think that I've been able to find solace and peace in knowing that like, I'm not supposed to fit in spaces. You know what I mean? Like all of us are navigating what colonization internally looks like for ourselves. But it makes me want to ask you guys, as Middle Eastern women living in America, how have you felt validated? What do you feel like are the biggest obstacles you've had to face in regards to like explaining your culture or celebrating your culture with other people?
I have always known that I am Arab and that I was an Arab person because my family is so proud and prideful of our culture. And we've always had that community. In San Francisco, we had this thing called the Ramallah Club, where everybody, because so many Arabs go to San Francisco and the Bay. The Bay Area is where the Arabs are at.
Yeah, the Bay Area.
And so the Ramallah Club is everybody who's literally from Ramallah, the village that my family is from in Palestine, goes to this club. And once a year, they would host a gala. It's hundreds of people. And this is why, whenever I'm somewhere, I'm like, oh, that's my cousin.
Yeah.
Because they're probably from Ramallah. And there's only like a few thousand people from this one village. And so I met people ever since I was so young that were from, you know, from Palestine, from Ramallah, but in America. So it was very weird because I had this sort of like Americanized upbringing where it was very suburban living, and my brother was on the football team, but like at the same time, we had a very distinct sense of where we came from. And that was always at the forefront. Mm. And instead of, you know, dropping off cupcakes or muffins when someone moves to the neighborhood, my mom would bring hummus. And like everyone knew about Christine's hummus. And my cousins on both sides were really, really close to us. Like one side of our family, the Lebanese side, we shared a backyard with them and they lived behind us. And then my other cousins who are like Natalia and Christian, who you've met, they would come every single weekend. We'd either go to San Francisco and see them, or they would come for every single holiday. And it was always a part of our community. And I was always proud of that. And it wasn't until I got older that I started to hear certain things and realize that maybe certain parts of my culture weren't something to be necessarily proud of. And I think when my sister started high school, she went to this like very upper echelon white high school, which was actually what the school in Lady Bird was based on.
Oh, wow.
St. Francis High School in Sacramento. And Greta Gerwig went there.
Greta Gerwig.
And so did my mom. And so did my sister. And that's when my mom started saying things like, oh, your sister's hanging out with like a lot of white people. Like she's trying to like fit in, and she wants to fit in that way. And I never thought of us having to fit in until then. And then when I moved to LA at 10 years old, I remember distinctly my mom telling me and my dad telling me, when you walk into the audition, they ask you, oh, what's your ethnicity?
Yeah.
My parents always said, never tell them you're Palestinian, because of how controversial it is to be Palestinian, unfortunately.
And you're not wanting
and how political it is. Yeah. And to be, so I always told people I'm Italian. So I would walk into rooms. I know they'd say, what's your ethnicity? And I would say, I'm Italian. And so I didn't start telling people I was Palestinian until I was like until I was like 16, 17 years old, maybe, maybe even 17 years old, 18. Like, I didn't even post about, you know, my own country until I was older. And I remember my cousins, my aunt, my auntie Reem, who I love so much, she would always ask me about it or tell me, you know, why don't you ever tell people? Why aren't you? And I think because I was afraid of my own identity being controversial, which is funny because my entire identity is, I guess, controversial, political in every aspect of the intersectionality that is Josie. But I kind of had to like find that within my own. And I kind of had more compassion for my sister of why we would go out to places or we would go get food and my sister would be like excited to not have our food because she was probably being bullied for it.
I was just going to say, I think with maturity too, like I've had to learn just to give people immense amount of grace. Like a lot of us are just trying to survive. Like
you have to,
even now, like you when I to. Meet someone, obviously not when someone's being like blatantly racist and awful, but when I meet a person of color who is uncomfortable in their own culture, ethnicity, I understand that people have made you to feel that way. So hopefully I can make you feel more comfortable in your skin and where you come from, because it isn't easy navigating these white spaces. And like, you know, you want to pander to white people to be accepted, to be elevated. Like we are working under these oppressive infrastructures where we want to succeed. And, you know, like I engage in respectability politics in high school and in college. And I am thankful for people in my life like you guys and communities that have given me the liberty to become a lot more radical and speak the way we do.
And I also feel like as to alienate them even more so than they
absolutely
does more of a disservice than we really think it does. Because like, I think, well, first of all, Josie, thank you for sharing all of that, because I feel like, and even though like, I didn't know some of the stories about your sister, but like, I know so much of this about you, but also you sharing this is so brave as well, because it takes a lot of courage to talk about a culture, our culture, that is not very common, because there's not a lot of Dominicans in this world. There's not a lot of Palestinians. There's not a lot of Lebanese. We have also very small countries.
Small, you know? But powerful, baby. So, there's something that you said, Yaz, that to isolate someone who is navigating what their culture looks like for them isn't helpful. Like, I think it's important to love someone through that process. And there's an African proverb that I love that says, the child that is ostracized from the tribe will burn it down. And I adore that African proverb, because I think it's that. Like for us as people from different cultures growing up in America and being minorities, I think that we have a distinct experience of trying to understand who we are in the United States and understanding the sacrifices that our family made for us, but keeping our culture alive. And there is like this duality that we have to learn how to deal with. And I think it's important to understand, like, we're not a monolith. We experience our cultures differently. Like, to come from immigrant parents is such a blessing, but it is something you have to, like, grow through. And Yaz, how do you feel like you did that growing up?
I feel like whenever I would say to people, like, oh, I'm Lebanese, so, like, you're a lesbian, I'm like,
little
no,
did
I said
they know.
Lebanese.
Little did you know.
Oh, T.
That I'm bisexual, too. It's... Being a Lebanese woman is the proudest thing about me. It's my pride and my joy. It's everything. It's, you know, growing up, I always knew I was different because believe it or not, I have very curly hair. But over the years of doing the keratin treatment and straightening it constantly, it is now like this. But if I don't do the keratin treatment, it will get curly again. But I want it to be white so badly, I straightened it every single day. I wanted to be white so badly that I would introduce myself as Yasmin or Yasmin for years up until college. I would be like, my name is Yasmin. Could you imagine that? Me saying that. And Yasmin Hamidi. When my name is Yasmin Hamidi. Yasmin Dial Ahmedi. And now when people say my name wrong, I'm like, actually, it's Yasmin. And I think for so long, because of white supremacy, we don't want to take up the space to correct people for their mistakes. And it's not making them feel like a fool or not making them feel like they did something wrong. But this is my name. Can you please say it correctly? You say the name Sarah correctly. You say the name Lindsay correctly. There's no problem where you can say Yasmin. And so that's my thing with all of this. And then also, like, my dad and my mom, you know, we all spoke Arabic growing up. You know, like my jiddu and teta, my sitti and jiddi, everyone spoke Arabic. Having a group of Arabs, specifically for me, the Lebanese community, has been a pillar of who I am. And that's specifically going to Lebanon in the summer. I was fortunate enough to go every summer. You know, there's pride holding that Lebanese flag. And we were colonized by the French years ago. And no one really knows that because we don't talk about the Middle East in our school. We don't talk about the Middle East whatsoever unless it's about war, you know. And I think specifically after 9/11, you know, the world of how we view Arabs have completely changed after that. And I think, and like, there's been spaces, it's been harder to navigate, like traveling is harder to navigate, you know. Also introducing my parents to people. I was always nervous to introduce my family to people growing up because they were always loud. Arabs are loud. Arabs are rowdy. And like, my mom's name is Amal. My dad's name is Mahmoud Danny. Like, you know what I mean? And there was, for so long, I was like, they're just going to be loud. They're not going to want to. They never took us to McDonald's growing up. They never took us to fast food chains. We just make some jejuriz or lebni with khibis, which is bread in the type of yogurt with khiyari, so which good. Is cucumber on it, and then eat it. The food, the culture, the music, there's nowhere I feel more home than like being in Lebanon, or like even like going to Josie's house to be with her parents because my parents are in the Bay. But like when her parents are here, like having your mom put out the fresh veggies and fruits out with a little bit of bread. You know, it's little things like that that reminds me of home so much. And then also seeing at your dad's birthday, everyone doing the debki. And a debki is a type of Middle Eastern dance. And every country does it a little bit differently. Palestine, Lebanon, Syria. Everyone does it a little differently where everyone holds hands and they go around in circles or around in a square and they just dance. And we could do a tutorial sometime to do it. But I think for so long I wanted to be white. And for so long, I hated the fact that my name was Yasmin. You know, I used to want to make my name Lorraine after Hillary Duff from Cheaper by the Dozen.
I didn't.
Not yeah. Lorraine. Out of all the fucking names, why not?
Lorraine is such an
yeah, no
name.
One knows that. I wanted to name my name Lorraine. I remember when I was like 10, I was like, Mom, I hate my name. Call me Lorraine. She's like, why? And I go, because I wanted to color my hair blonde. I wanted blue eyes. I would start cutting my hair, like shaving my hair, but like my mom didn't let me shave it. Is this with you guys too? Did your parents not want you to shave your hair? They always said wax it because it's gonna grow back darker.
This is something that I still don't do till this day, and I'm so grown. My mom told me to never shave above my knee, so I shave above my knee when I tell you maybe 2 times a year.
But she doesn't have hair above her knee.
I do.
Yeah.
But my mom just told me that.
But speaking of hair,
you're lucky.
That's one big insecurity that I feel like I have. Because as Arabs, we have so much hair. And thank God that we do, because the hair on our head. But no, because the hair on our head is very thick and luscious and amazing. And I love my hair, even though my hair can be a bit of a bitch to style sometimes, because it's so thick. And I think people are surprised all the time about how big my hair is.
You have such beautiful thick hair. I love it.
But I feel that all the time. Like, there's hair on my body. And that's why it makes me feel so happy to see other Arab women and other Arab people, and like my own sister, like, who also like have hair on their arms. And like, thankfully I don't have, my mom has like grew up getting her like upper lip wax and things like that I don't have to do, thank God. But like, that's very big in our community, is having so much hair. And that was something that I was always so embarrassed about. And I feel like I've had to learn to, I even said it to you today. I was like, I'm so embarrassed. But like, I have to learn to like rock it and own it. And I'm grateful for it because I have my brows.
Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of body plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all 4.5-inch body plants are on sale through May 5th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards. On this episode of Plant Killers, we'll explore one nation's most notorious fruit and vegetable killer, bad dirt. What makes bad dirt so bad? The answer? The ingredients. But fear not, true crime enthusiasts. This story has a happy ending. New Miracle-Gro Organic Raised Bed and Garden Soil. It's made with quality organic ingredients from upcycled green waste like compost and aged bark. Unlike the other guys who can't say the same. Looks like bad dirt's murdering days are over, thanks to Miracle-Gro. Join us next time on Plant Killers.
As a chef and a restaurant owner, I'm as meticulous about my cookware as I am about my ingredients. That's why I love Made In Cookware. Each pan they make isn't just designed to perform, it's crafted to last. As a mom, I love that I can trust Made In. It's made from the world's finest materials, so I can feel good about what I'm feeding my family. I'm Chef Brooke Williamson, and I use Made In Cookware.
What are things that, as a kid, specifically in regards to like your culture, what are stereotypes from our cultures or misconceptions that like we had to like overcome or that would like really frustrate us? I have a laundry list as a Latina. Specifically being an Afro-Latina, just number one, people being like, you're not a thing. Like I've had people straight up be like, no, you're not. So that, just specifically in my own intersectionality, people just fully do not believe we're a thing or fully believe, especially in the industry that I'm in, that like we deserve a larger voice. Like if they want a Latina, I think I'm so used to like it being this cookie cutter, like super opinionated, over the top, loud, which I am all those things, but not all Latinos are that. Being over-sexualized is a huge thing. I think because I'm a Latina woman, people being Latina and Black because of misogyny noir and then, you know, machismo. So both just awful ideals that people perpetuate. I think people fetishize me in a lot of ways. Like they fetishize me because they were like, ooh, like
spicy,
you're spicy, you're exotic. You see me. I think that I've done inner work to not respond from a place of hate when people say things. But I think my one thing that I still like, my eye twitches when anyone says to me, which people still do, is that I'm spicy.
Well, also another thing that I've been prejudiced to you about.
Oh gosh.
Is, and this is in large part because of my own ignorance. It's so weird to say I grew up growing up in LA because I kind of did grow up in LA. I moved here when I was like 9-10 years old.
Yeah, I feel like LA is a part of your...
The majority of my life I've lived in LA. Mm-hmm. But I think because of that, so much of my experience and knowledge with Latino people is Mexican culture because we are so close to Mexico. And like everyone, I grew up learning Spanish and meeting people that speak Spanish. And on the street, you could speak to like one out of every 10 people probably know Spanish in Los Angeles. And I just assumed, I remember we were at a Roma cafe and I was just like, you don't like spicy food? How are you Latina and you don't like spicy food?
Yeah.
And you were like, because I'm Dominican, bitch. And we actually don't have any spicy food.
In our national
meals. Food.
Yeah. And that is a misconception. And it seems so minuscule. That is like one of the biggest things. And mind you, I love the Mexican culture. Like I've been called the Blaxican many a times in my life and I'm honored, but I'm just like, I'm not that. There's this thing that we do that we homogenize cultures and it does a disservice to all the beauty that cultures have within them. Like I've had to tell people like, no, I'm not Brazilian. Like someone just yesterday in this hotel in Puerto Rico, a Black man came up to me and goes, you're Brazilian, right? And I was like, one, sir, you don't know me. Two, no, I'm not Brazilian. I am Dominican. Like people are so emboldened to just like assume. And I'm just like, don't do that and ask. And like growing up with my name, like literally like I had an agent once tell me to not even just that.
Alicia.
I had an agent tell me to change it because, you know, they weren't going to see me for Latina. And shout out to her because she wasn't wrong. Like for the first few years of my career, like I just. He was right. People just didn't want to see me.
What does she want your name to be?
They were just like, do you want to like drop your last names because it's so long and because like you want to lean into being ethnically ambiguous.
Like Zendaya.
Yeah, they were like, it's
I
so
know,
long.
That's what they always called me, ethnically ambiguous.
Yeah, they were like, you're ethnically ambiguous. You can go out for everything. And as a little girl learning who you are, like it was hard because I did have to ask myself, should I be proud of being Black and should I be proud of being Latina? And then, like, even in high school, I had, like, a group of people call me Consuela. Like, and I'd have people be like, oh, Julio Esteban, like, from Sweet Life, Zach and Cody. Because my name is
Alisa. Love him.
We love him. Shout out to him. Because my name...
Did you inadvertently memorize it?
No, that's the thing. I didn't know it. I don't know after Julio. Like, shout out to that Latino man. But I was like, yes, my name is Alicia del Sol Pascual Peña. And I love all of my name. And I'm glad that I didn't change it or drop it for acting or to lean into being ethnically ambiguous.
No. And you know what? Our ancestors and also your parents worked so damn hard to give you that name. They didn't just wake up one morning and be like, oh, her name's going to be Alicia del Sol Pascual Peña. Like, no, they put effort into that. Do you know what I mean? And so it's important to carry that baton on because that is a part of
your culture. Yes, I can't think of any misconceptions or stereotypes in our culture.
Why? Are you lying?
Stereotypes. Oh, I've been asked any before.
As Arabs?
Yes,
bitch, I'm joking.
I can tell you right now.
This is sarcasm.
We're called terrorists. We're bombers.
I thought you were serious.
We smell.
We're bombers. Disgusting. We're terrorists. We're maids. We smell camels, sand. I've been asked before, like, where is Lebanon or what's that? The amount of times where I'm like, I'm Lebanese. It's either, oh, you're a lesbian. I'm like, no. Or B, you're Lebanon. Where's that? What's Lebanon? Where's that? Is that near Czechoslovakia? Is that near one of the countries in the Europe area? No, that is in the Middle East.
One
fucking asshole. That's what you can fucking do.
I think is also important to mention too, that it's a misconception, is a lot of people think all Arabs are Muslim. And there's obviously nothing wrong with being Muslim. I have so many cousins that are and know people that are. But I think that there's so much religious diversity in the Middle East and specifically in Palestine. Like back in the day, every single creed, religion existed in that area and everyone lived together happily, which is why it's sad that that everything that's happening with the apartheid
really
in Israel.
Yeah.
And I think
Free Palestine.
That is also something that is really difficult to navigating the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the apartheid, because I am meeting people as an adult and navigating the world as an adult and wanting to make friendships and connections and having such a turbulent thing, a part of that just comes with being existing, makes things a lot more difficult. And like, that's why I'm really grateful to my friends who are from Tel Aviv and their families are from the other side of the West Bank. And like my friend Mimi, and we have like long, extensive conversations.
Yeah.
And I think those are so important. And I also think my activism and my speaking out is so important. And it's so difficult too, because I think when you talk about any apartheid or any oppressor, it's hard to look at it like having a conversation, because how can you have a conversation with about something that you're being oppressed about?
Yeah. Like where your own personal family is dealing with.
Yeah.
Like, I will say, I really, really commend the both of you guys, because I have seen people lack so much compassion in regards to the conversation about where you guys are from. Like, you guys aren't actually dealing with the implications of the apartheid. And it disheartens me that I personally don't think enough people around us are saying, like, Free Palestine and having this conversation with enough context and knowledge of what's happening on the ground. As a friend, I think you guys really intelligently and kindly educate people when you shouldn't have to, frankly. Because people should be aware of the atrocities happening and the apartheid going on and the amount of lives being lost.
I am not Palestinian, but I am, as an Arab woman, I think it's all the more important as another Arab country and as another, we have to stand up for our other Arab siblings, specifically in Palestine, because I feel so often the Middle Eastern countries, they want to remain silent on things and they want to like just mind their own business when our brothers and sisters and siblings are being affected by this directly.
Yeah.
And that's something like I pride myself and my family doing. Like we're never going to stay silent about this because it does affect the people we love and it does affect us too. Because Alicia, you have said this and it has always stuck with me. And this is not even specifically to do with the Arabs, but this is something to do with every marginalized community, is What is the exact wording of it? A win for one marginalized community is a win for all.
Yeah, I say it all the time. Like, our liberation doesn't matter if we can't free our sisters and brothers. You know what I mean? Like, I think that we should
100%.
All be taking up space while allocating it for other people that don't look like us or don't speak our language. I think that's what progression looks like. I think that if we want to fight for an equitable world, it's about learning about other people while also standing true in who we are.
There is a lot of ignorance within the Lebanese community, and there's like a lot of like right-wing Lebanese people, and
that, Josie, we want to take it there. Let's take it there.
Get me started.
But that's also important to talk about too, because not every community thinks the same, obviously. So I find that interesting. And I think when we talk about 9/11, which was obviously one of the worst things to ever happen to our country, and such an awful, like, abhorrent day and an event.
Yes.
But when we discuss it, I think it's important, not at the same time, because I think we need to honor the lives lost and how awful that was and how traumatic that was. But I think it's also important to discuss the way 100%. Arabs were perceived in this country changed tremendously after that day. And we didn't even have TSA or security at airports until 9/11.
Yeah.
And they were taught and they learned how to look out for, you know, certain threats. And most of that was just racial profiling. And navigating the world as an Arab person, an identity that I don't necessarily am perceived immediately by people to have. So I have the privilege to pass in that way. But my family members who wear hijabs or, you know, cover their hair and are wearing certain things, you know, are immediately stopped or immediately spoken to. And there is evidence statistically that Arab hate crimes towards Arab people went up by astronomical numbers after that. And I think that we forget how the way we are perceived, the way we perceive our own people. And I just think that is an important thing to mention.
I think it's important to acknowledge that. But so I want to go back to what you said about the right-winged, very conservative parts of the Arab community and also a lot of POC communities too. There's like this special little pocket of like conservatives. Like, who am I thinking about? Judge Jeanine Pirro on Fox. She's a Lebanese. Isn't she Lebanese?
Well, she's like
this
Pirro.
Arab woman who's well, like pro-life. Well, actually, pro-life, pro-Trump.
Like, she,
and
people.
I'm just like, you give us such a bad name. She is Lebanese. And I'm just like, why, Judge Jeanine? Why? Because you give us such a bad name.
Yo, no.
It's like Marco Rubio.
Like, I will never forget, and I talk about it openly, one of the highest demographics to vote for Trump were Latinos, were white-ass Latinos. And I will never forget, like, you do not stand in solidarity with your sisters and brothers of color. And I've had people who are very right-wing tell me, Alicia, pero we're all Latinos. And I'm like, no, because we're not living the same life. And you're okay with being complicit to my oppression. Mm. And you're taking part in that. And there are, I think this is a much larger narrative upon just immigration, not just even our own cultures, but people within our own cultures fit within this mold, that they will get to America or immigrate from a place, understandably, because they're overcoming adversity or they want a new life, which is something really commendable. But then they get there and they want to assimilate so bad that they believe that they need to prove themselves in whiteness or associate with oppression. And I'm sorry, like, I will never justify that. I think I have understanding and compassion why there are peculiar people that believe in the bootstrap theory. And it's like, no, I think that you've forgotten where you come from and are lacking compassion for people with immigrant stories and understanding that it looks different. Like, my dad, I don't know why he's telling me this as a little girl, but my dad would tell me, because I have never understood why there are so many Latinos or so many people of color that are so complicit in the oppression of other people. And he would say, unfortunately, a lot of people do this thing, and he calls it like the bus theory. Because if you know anything about New York or even in Dominican Republic, we call them guaguas, are super packed. And it's like, before you got on the bus, you'd be chasing that bus. I know I ran after a bus in the Bronx. You'd be chasing that bus. And you're like, and you literally are trying to slip like a couple of dollars to the bus driver, like, please, like, stop here in between stops. But then when you're on that bus, you have people in the back advocating, no, keep going. They missed it. They missed the bus. They missed the bus. Or, oh, nah. Like, this bus is packed right now.
I just realized you're giving an analogy.
Yes.
Because I'm like, Yasmin, you've never been on a bus. I was like, why are you?
Oh, what are you talking about? I've been on a bus.
An MTA New York bus, though.
So sorry. A party bus.
And I'm not talking about no party bus. I'm talking about MTA bus in New York.
So I've been on a bus. The one going from Newport Beach back to Orange.
Now you have Yas fighting for her life. I've been on a bus. But anyways, it is analogy. It's analogy for immigration. I must say, not all skin folk is kinfolk. We must remember that, my sisters and brothers. And just because someone is from your community doesn't mean that they respect your experience. I'm not naive to the fact that my parents sacrificed so much and overcame obstacles to allow me a life that they did not have. So it would be naive of me to sit here and not understand the privilege that I've had by being raised in America. So I'm so grateful that I was allotted an education and I had resources that my parents didn't have. Like, they come from the most humble beginnings, and that is never lost on me. So I am grateful, you know, that I was raised in a country where I was allotted a lot of benefits. But I think the other side of that truth is, because I am a minority, because I am proudly Black, because I am Latina, my experience had certain obstacles and I felt ostracized and I feel oppressed because of my race and my culture and ethnicity. And that's okay. But I think it is also important for us to acknowledge that we were blessed in a lot of ways. And there's a reason that our parents are the immigrant story. And I would argue that we actually are the American dream. The three of us girls, we are the American dream.
Yes, like, we are.
And you know, and like, I'm very grateful that I come from a household and two parents specifically that were very outspoken politically. Like, from a very young age, they made me aware of ways that this country didn't value us. But I would argue that on a land of the United States that is of indigenous people and built by African individuals who were enslaved, we are the dream. The fact that our parents from different cultures, from different countries, came here and made a life for themselves out of nothing, that is poetic. I think we are the American dream. Like, in the words of Key, like when he was giving his speech, that is the American dream to me. You know what I mean? Like, him being an actor and his family coming from where they come from and him not feeling validated and being an Asian man with an accent. Like, that is what I actually think it is. I don't think it's this commercialized, superficial idea of the white picket fence without blended household. And that makes me want to end with a question that brings me joy, because I know how proud we are of our own cultures. Is how did your parents living in America still celebrate and uplift your culture? Like, how did they make you aware of where you come from and your roots?
For me, it's the food. For me, it's the people that we surround ourselves with. Yeah, you're like the food. We have an amazing community of Lebanese people. Like, my parents' friends. They're my tant. They're my khalo. They're my uncle, my aunt. Even if we're not blood related, they are my uncle and my aunt. They're my tant and khalo. They're my cousins. And we've only met twice. It's the music. It's listening to Feyruz, who is an old Lebanese singer back in the 80s.
Nancy, shout out Nancy.
Shout out Nancy Ajram. It's listening to stories from my jiddo, listening to stories from my teta, going back to my land and making it an important pillar of the foundation of our upbringing. So for that, my parents, like, I'm forever indebted to them, and I can't wait for my future kids.
I agree.
To
when be doing I think of Arabic food, them. I think it's like water to me. Like, I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like, it's
so it's necessary.
Like, I'm eating something different. I just eat like hummus and tabbouleh, and I grew up eating mashia. My teta would make me mashi back in the day, and that was like my favorite meal and like tomato soup. Like, there's nothing better than like your teta's own meals, and I wish that I was old enough or to like have more memories of that time because she died when I was quite young. But so definitely the food, the people, and just the fact that like we as Arabs, we have such like a mob mentality in the sense of like, if anyone else is also an Arab, that is our cousin.
Oh, so absolutely.
I'm recognized in my own culture.
Very familial.
Anytime yes. I get an Uber and I hear an accent, I'm like, are you Arabic? Are you Middle Eastern? And I know immediately.
Yes.
When we're on the street and my mom will like just start yelling at someone that she thinks is Middle Eastern. Sometimes it's awkward when they're not. Or like if someone is Palestinian or Lebanese, like they'll be spending the night at our house. We'd only met them twice, but because they're also Arab, like
they're home, they're family
to us. I think the only thing that I would be sad about or would be remiss if to not include, and I know I don't need DNA to do that, is my Arab culture because I want my kids to grow up eating the same food that I did and all of that and in that environment. Yeah. So I think those are ways we celebrate. We love to party. We did this weekend and we'll do it again. And yeah, I'm just so proud of being Arab, and I love Bella Hadid, and I love Mo, and I love Rami Malek,
Mo's so good.
And I love Rami Yusuf as well.
Hayat Elbi,
I just want to say I'm really proud of you guys. It's not easy to always stand in your truth and in your culture, especially when it's like politicized or people may deem it controversial, quote unquote. And I hope you guys both know, like, you have blessed me. I have been so honored, and it's been like one of the greatest gifts knowing you guys, to not only know you on a personal level but learn more about your culture and your traditions and your phenomenal food, and just food, I got emotional, and learning about your intersectionalities. And you guys are going to continue to educate people about where you come from and uplift and celebrate the beauty of where you guys come from. And
but same for you though.
Yeah, thank you. I think anyone who knows me,
can you tell us,
anyone who knows me knows like I rep where I am from, like it is tatted on my forehead.
Yes, you do.
I love my community so much. I think one of the biggest parts of my identity is being an Afro-Latina woman and standing proudly in that, through all the complicated intricacies of people not understanding me, or people, I think, commodifying my experience or fetishizing me. All of those things aside, like, I wouldn't trade it for the world. But I'm so grateful for each part of our culture. Every single part I take pride in, and I just am always so humbled to share moments with my community. Like, our food is the best. Tres Golpes is like my favorite meal on the planet. I could dance bachata for 7 days straight. I think the energy and our resilient spirit of being on an island, like our joy, like it is, I think, a foundation of who I am. Like, to look at things with an optimistic lens is because of, you know, in part because I'm Dominican. And man, are we crazy and boisterous. And I love every part of it. I love the ratchetry. I love the dembow. I love sounding que soy del campo. I love all of it. I love que mi familia tiene un finca. Like, I love all of it.
You better tell them.
But thank you. Yes. Yeah.
I was just going to say that there is really no other culture other than my own that I feel so much pride in than Dominican culture. And it makes me so happy. And I'm so upset that like people are so ignorant, because you are so beautiful and your story is so beautiful and your culture and your people are so incredible. And just like, thank you for constantly sharing that. And now when I go to a club or a bar and someone says that they're Dominican, like, I scream.
Yeah.
And like, it makes me, and they're very confused because they're like, you're literally a white woman. Yeah. But I'm like, you don't understand. Like,
I want to close out this episode by dedicating it to our beautiful multicultural families. We wouldn't be who we are like without them. And I also want to give the biggest abrazo y besos, which means the biggest hugs and kisses, to kids from immigrant families. Like, you are seen, and whatever your cultural experience is valid, and we love you. And don't shy away from learning more about who you are and your ancestry and roots. It's powerful and it's special, and you should feel beautiful in whatever your culture is.
I love that. That's beautiful. Yay.
Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week. Dare We Say is a Crooked Media production.
Caroline Reston is our showrunner, producer, and mommy. And Ari Schwartz is our producer and show daddy. Fiona Pastana is our associate producer, and Sandy Girard is the almighty executive producer.
It's hosted and produced by me, Josie Toda.
And me, Yasmin Hamadi.
And me, Alicia Pascual Peña.
Our engineer and editor is Jordan Cantor, and Brian Vasquez is our theme music composer.
Our video producers are Mac DeGroot, Nar Melkonian, and Dylan Villanueva, and Mia Kelman.
Lastly, thank you to Jordan Silver, Gabriella Leverett, Jesse McLean, Caroline Haywood, Shayna Hortzman, Daisy Cruz, Danielle Jensen, and Awa Okaladi for marketing the show and making us look so damn good.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
On this episode of Plant Killers, we'll explore one nation's most notorious fruit and vegetable killer, bad dirt. What makes bad dirt so bad? The answer? The ingredients. But fear not, true crime enthusiasts. This story has a happy ending. New Miracle-Gro Organic Raised Bed and Garden Soil. It's made with quality organic ingredients from upcycled green waste like compost and aged bark. Unlike the other guys who can't say the same. Looks like bad dirt's murdering days are over, thanks to Miracle-Gro. Join us next time on Plant Killers.